many people come to a bunch to hear a bunch of nothing from a guy like me.
So how is everybody doing?
Did you bring all the rain?
Well, Divine Mother wanted to wash the farmers out, I guess.
Yeah, huh?
No, the rain is important. I left Gretna, you know. New Orleans is pretty warm. Then on the way in, coming through the Dallas, saw the clouds and I figured I'm going to get some rain. Let's just calm the mind for a second. Mind has a tendency to drift because this is natural. You'll find it wants to drift to an idea concerning the past, and by its own mechanics it will generate frustration. Then the mind would want to shift and concentrate on an idea concerning the future. And by its own mechanics, this will generate anxiety. But if the mind stays on an idea concerning now, the present, the fact that you are, you exist, by its own mechanics, you begin to feel peace. slowly open the eyes, but don't move. Try to adjust back to the environment. As you bring the mind out through the eyes, meditation is actually a direct approach to your inner self. No one can do it for you. And the results are self-evident after practicing it. One, there is inner peace. Two, the inner knowledge that comes with it. Three, the inner strength that comes with it. And then there are some unspoken powers that follow as a result of it. But the first three are very important. In the environment in which we live in, peace is very hard to find after so much conflict and daily activity. And no tranquilizing tablet can do it for us. So if we can find a way to shut down this mechanism that is involved with the environment and revitalize ourselves, we've got something. Every religion, every scriptural writing lay emphasis on this one particular approach. But like every word that we know of pertaining to meditation or any idea pertaining to it is so misleading that we really don't know what meditation is. In fact, the word meditation is a result of many words put together by the sages. See, the sages were masters of word puzzles. They knew how to hide a complete science in one word, just as we would hide now many names in one word, like we have NASA, National Aviation, Space Aviation. These are words put together. Meditation is exactly the same. M stands for mental. E stands for energy. This is mind and energy at work all the time. It is evident to you all the time that you are dealing with mind or consciousness and energy. And mind and energy are always moving. It's never stagnant. That's why it fluctuates from past to present to future. So we have MED already. Mind, energy, direction.
Hello. Yes.
But this is an individualistic science. I cannot meditate for you, and you can't for me. It's obvious. It's a do-it-yourself process.
Yes, uh-huh.
There is no broker between you and the creative intelligence. You are the creative intelligence already, locked up in yourself. And meditation is a method of unlocking this creative intelligence. So it's individualistic. T represents thought, and A represents activities. So we have mind, energy, directing individual thought activities. You're confronted with this from the very start of the practice of meditation as an experience. You're struggling with it. You are struggling with ideational functions, thought action. But these thought actions move also for a purpose. They move towards T. I, again, intuitive. That means independent of your senses. The man who meditates eventually achieves extrasensory perception, an awareness that transcends the five senses, right to the very core of the atomic structure. He knows that he knows now. O, observation and oneness. That's why we say meditation is twofold. With seed or without seed. Many books have been written on the subject. As to say, with seed, that means it's an object that you concentrate on. Without seed, there's no object. It really means, O, an extrasensory observation and an extrasensory oneness. N, noumena, not phenomena. God, not a person. Conscious reality, self. It brings peace, an awareness, strength, and above all, devotion. Now, the last part is very hard. We can generate blind devotion and become fanatics. But genuine devotion can only come through knowledge, a knowledge of the universe we live in. Now, when you are devoted to this knowledge, there is a transformation occurring within you. There is a gradual change occurring within the structure. Then we can go back and validate the scriptures from meditation. The scriptures state of all religions that the human body is the temple of the living God. And we look at it with disgust at times and ask ourselves, how can this be the temple of the living God? But our comprehension of the living God and the temple is what makes for the disgust. The realization makes for the appreciation. Until we realize what this really is, we cannot have devotion for God yet. To destroy it, to break it up without knowing what is involved, leads us to a state of ignorance, that is, ignoring the laws of creation. But the moment we begin to investigate into its structure and its nature, by its inherent forces, there is a wisdom that comes down into the consciousness permanently. It's never lost no more. That is being revealed. That's why it's called revealed. It's not, no one can give it to you. The knowledge is revealed from within you by the meditative process. So we see it's a very, very marvelous exposure for anyone to be with people who meditate. Jesus once said when he was in the body, "When two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst." Now, how many of us comprehend two or three gathering in my name? We can give lip service, but as far as a personal experience is involved, this is entirely different. Because if we are attempting to experience that particular statement, we will discover something we have never discovered before about ourselves. We're going to be exposed for the first time to levels of consciousness and planes of existence and depths of knowledge not possible from books and not possible by thinking. It's involved an extrasensory nature now. "The things I do, you shall do also," he said. "And lesser things shall you do." Not better than me. Did he say that? No. He said, "Greater things shall you do." Proving that he made you his equal and gave you a higher evaluation of yourself, God. By proving to us that we are God in as manifested. I am not God, but God manifest and became us. It's the difference. He has proven that by saying, "The things I do, you shall do also, and greater things shall you do." Now, if he had said anything outside of that, then we can say he was the only Son of God. Then we would be caught in the verbal trap of language from translations and interpretations of what was meant in the meditative science. But since we know by meditation that the Christ in man is the cosmic light present here and exists independent of our five senses, then it is possible to verify for each one of us the reality of the Master Jesus and the true meaning of his words from within ourselves. We can have an experience of it. And the very things he said that he did, we can do also. And if greater things are required of us, it is done also, depending upon the evolution or the need. Now, anything that the Master has done, there was a need. It's never done for show. There is no three-ring circus. If you look into just the life of Jesus, there were always present the need, not the want. And the emphasis on looking inside. Meditation brings us right there at the start to look inside. Jesus said that, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God which is within you." Now, this is a very good statement until we begin to experiment with it. It is not so good because you don't know what's inside of you. And if you knew what's inside of you, you may not want to investigate. You see? So, also, if you knew what's inside of you, you may want to investigate. It's quite a tricky thing to seek the kingdom of God which is within you. Now, he didn't say seek God, which is within you. As if he had said seek God, which is within you, there'd be a difference than if he said seek ye first the kingdom of God, which is within you. Now, another master put it this way. He said, "Everything else can wait, but the search for God cannot." It's the same as you say, man know thyself. The emphasis is back here. Nothing new has been taught by the sages. It's the same thing. The greater emphasis today is how to look in here. We don't know how to look inside. No one is going to come along and says, this is the way to look inside. Because we have no guarantee that is the way to look inside. But if we have the qualifications that go to, from looking inside, and if these qualifications are transferable. Now Jesus once said, by the fruits you shall know them. If this transferable condition is possible, how to look inside, then we can all make the effort to look inside ourselves. One of the first things we observe by looking inside is peace. I do not say that you will find miracles, because I haven't found any yet. But I know it exists. I do not perform any, but I've seen them happen. Now, Jesus said, the peace I give, the world don't give. I haven't found outside of myself through my five senses any possible way for this mechanism to become peaceful. And if the Master Jesus said to look inside, then I had to make an attempt to go inside. I would not guarantee you that the first 10 minutes I achieved anything. In fact, I've been meditating nearly over 30 years now. And it's a slow process. Can't plant a mango and eat it tomorrow, or plant an orange and eat it tomorrow. It takes that much time by nature. You cannot acquire overnight peace, let alone realization overnight. This is a process. You only work into it by slow, methodical action. That's why he said, take up your cross and follow me. Not the man, Jesus. Lift up your consciousness and research into yourself, the me, the real self. Lift it up. See, it's easy for the five senses to stay outside, because every condition from the environment generates emotion. Very little from this environment can generate devotion. It was never intended for the environmental world through the five senses to generate emotion. Devotion, I'm sorry. What was intended from the environment is to generate emotion, to pull you out, to keep the consciousness crystallized or involved, localized, and then set up arguments, debates, and finally hit each other in the head. Very little is left for you to go inside now and evaluate. So in poetical language, or in the language of the time of Jesus, all ye that travail and are heavy laden, come unto me and I'll refresh you. That's one way of saying it. Come, let us look inside now. Forget the environment. You're struggling with it. Let's look inside. The I am in you will refresh you. That is to say, all right, I shut off for a moment. I came on a long journey, which involved an airplane and cars and so forth. I'm shutting it out. It's travail, it's work. It's an involvement with my five senses. How can I refresh myself? Where do I go to refresh? Do I take a Alka-Seltzer, or do I take a tranquilizer, or a Coke, or a shot of gin? Or do I go to bed? Or do I go into myself for the first time and observe this mechanism? What makes its function? And we are confronted with a horrible fact that when we go in, what is so obvious to us that we take very little notice of is that we breed. And we take it for granted that we breed. Yet the scripture says, God breathed the breath of life into man, and man became a living soul. Man did not become a living body, or a living mind, or a living spirit. He became a living soul. So man is soul already. But man doesn't accept that. Man thinks he has a soul. And he go around continuing searching for the soul. And eventually he will search right where he started back. Breath. After all the struggles from outside and finding no solution, nature, by its own mechanics, brings us back here. Now, we're not supposed to alter this breath or interfere with this breath. We're supposed to realize something about it. That's a big difference of trying to realize it or trying to alter it. Anyone tells you to alter your breathing or to force it in order to live, you can tell them it's highly unscientific and it's untrue. And none of the scriptures ever point out that you have to alter or interfere with the principle of life, which is breath. What is pointed out in the scriptures as a tangible experience, it's a self-observation that man is the living breath. And the living breath is the audible life stream, which is the conscious. Now, this consciousness has colors all of its own and certain sounds of its own. And in meditation, you see these colors and you hear these sounds. And the colors have certain qualities. And the sounds also have certain qualities. Master Jesus said, if the eyes are single, when thine eye is single, the body is full of light. Now, light is also a result of color, you know. You break it up and you have color. That's how we know it's a composition. It's colors. Now, when you go inside here to meditate, you will see a light. Some of us are fortunate, some are not right away. This has nothing to do with the intelligence giving one priority over the other. Nothing of the sort. This is strictly your level of evolution within yourself. It's just like the wattage of a bulb. Some bulbs have 10 watts, 100 watts, 50 watts. That's the way they made them. But they will all light up nevertheless. Now, this is the level of consciousness you're at in yourself. Now, some of us may not see the light right away, but may hear those sounds right away. And some of us may not hear the sounds right away, but may see the light right away. And some of us may not see light, but may see the breaking up of the light in the colors which they represent. And some of us may not only hear the sounds, but we may hear the distinct types of sounds, depending, again, on the level of evolution you're at. Now, those sounds have often been referred to as the music of the spheres. And the colors that we see inside, which is the light, represents God. Now, all the scriptures of every nation or group of people who have ever attempted to write something about God ended up saying that God was light. Never could say he had form. And that God was sound. Now, the best statement ever laid out by a great saint was John, who said, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt in man. Now the question is, what is Word? We all know word is sound again. And sound is vibration. You can only experience it by meditation. Now, in the deepest states of prayer, you want to say prayer or affirming a thought in your consciousness to the exclusion of every other thought, which borders on almost what we try to achieve in meditation, that is a centering of your mind in the present, not on something concerning the past or the future, you will hear those sounds again. So some people who have prayed very deeply have often heard these sounds. Also, they have often seen these colors and thought something was wrong with their ears or something wrong with their eyes, not knowing that they were experiencing the reality of themselves. Yet, at the same time, they were convinced in the affirmation of the idea that the deity was listening to them. Now, this is no blasphemy or disregard for the deity, but is understanding what the deity is and trying to put a label on what deity is. God is reality already. He has become us. In the fact that matter, consciousness, energy, all locked up in one. The purest consciousness, the purest energy, crystallized as the purest form, matter. Now, this realization is a challenge to our thinking today. Why? Because of the imprinting of environment and the education of the environment. It challenges us to think and to accept the reality of ourselves. We can't. It's too harsh a pattern to look upon ourselves and say, this weakling carries a God self. This vehicle can do something that is supposed to be godly. When every attempt turns out to some form of failure, but there's a purpose behind that. It is to teach us humility and to teach us understanding. That's why Jesus would say, if he was standing in this room, the things I cannot do by myself, I myself can do nothing, he says, or do anything, but the spirit which is within me, there's the difference. What is the spirit? Where is the spirit? How comes the spirit? Where is the spirit going from? But the spirit which is within me, or the Father which is within me, another name for the positive principle, doeth everything. Now this is a challenge to us, because we cannot experience this challenge until we meditate. We cannot match this consciousness yet until we meditate or start to stabilize our five senses. We get glimpses of it when we pray. Now, this doesn't say prayer is inadequate. We haven't begun to pray. Let's put it that way. Good. Now, prayer doesn't need words. The real prayer, as Mahatma Gandhi once said, is a complete fast. That means of food, of ideas, of speech, of sight, smelling and hearing. You're fasting away from all these things. You're shutting off from all these things. That would be a complete prayer, he's of putting it in his words. In the words of the Master Jesus, when thou prayest, retreat into thy innermost chamber. Now, where would be the innermost chamber of a human being? Certainly not in the bathroom of the house. Where would the innermost chamber be in this physical frame that you would have to retreat in to pray? And this, the instructions were specific. Knock. Now, you can only knock at one particular portion of a building for it to open, he says. Knock and it shall be open. Do you knock at the window to have somebody admit you in? Or you knock at the door And certainly, I don't think a master would indicate such terminology unless he was fully aware of the inner workings of the mechanism that it was a door. Now, in the Oriental writings, this is called the tenth door of the house of God, the Dasam Dwar, or the third eye. It's a door. It opens, and we see three colors in light. When we see the first color, it's gold. And this golden light is the presence of the Holy Spirit, and you begin to speak in tongues. It's the gift of the Holy Spirit. When it does descend on the human being. Now, speaking in tongues is one of the functions, but not as what we see today and call it speaking in tongues. There are living masters who do converse in every known language, as a scholar would converse. Not just talking some few words out of a language and then somebody try to interpret it. They are fully realized. Even in the time of Jesus, the 12 disciples who went out and spoke in every man's language according to the area he went to. So there's a big difference between having psychological awakenings and a spiritual awakening. The five senses can do many things. This subconscious mind can do many things, except one thing. Anything it does, there is no permanency in it. It is the greatest imitator of all the spiritual laws. That's where the psychic and the saint part company. That's where the people who have all these so-called spiritual experiences think they're having spiritual experiences, but they're only having mental experiences. The genuine saint don't even do anything. Because in the first place, he would transmit to you, without the use of language, the thought image to your mind. And that's where he transcends the psychic. He will let you have the inner experience. He will open a door in your consciousness for you to experience something that's not possible to be transferred. There's a big difference. Now, we have evidence of that. When the Master Jesus was in the body, he fed many people. Now, if it was a mental hallucination or a hypnotic trick to feed so many thousand people, good and fine. But why make an issue over 12 baskets of crumbs after they finish eat? Who makes an issue of the dishes you gotta clean up when you feed the group of people? As something so important and significant at a feast. Because that's labor involved, to clean it up, to record it. Then it's a permanency involved. There's a big difference. You can trick the public into thinking they have eaten, and you can take a camera and photograph, but there's nothing being eaten. But if you have the evidence of 12 baskets of crumbs, then there's something here that transcends. There's a difference altogether. We're speaking of an entire different experience, an entire different control of knowledge that is passing by way true man from the inner, the higher self, God. Now, a real genuine saint or master would never say the things he do you cannot do. If he's giving you the truth, it's because he knows that there is no monopoly on the truth. The emphasis is towards meditation. But meditation is a very tough road. I don't say you can sit down and meditate and become masters. Don't promise you that. But I do say this though. Through the practice of meditation, you will gradually learn how to meditate. And in so doing, you will experience everything that the Master Jesus spoke of. Now, through the practice of playing on the violin, one day you may be out on the podium, a virtuoso in front of the audience. Realized men are the result of long practice. It's not an overnight thing. But what it offers in the early stages of the growth, it offers you peace, sense of direction, knowledge of yourself, and strength that comes that nowhere else can come from. Those who have passed through these fires, as I call them, the fires of realization, they're no longer the person they were when they started. I have seen many. This last summer, I was fortunate to be with some young boys and girls who spent some time with me in New Orleans. And they were not pampered. They had some rough going to get down and knuckle down to meditation. But I do say this, I'm very proud of the results that came from them, of their tremendous growth from what they were to what they are now. And more is yet to come out of it. They've made tremendous strides in acquiring the inner peace. Now, when you begin to meditate, three things occur right away. One, you're going to be the center of ridicule and aggravation. And in fact, you wish you had never meditated or ever heard of the word, because everything starts crashing on you then, crumbling down. They think you're a nut, or something is wrong with you. And since you don't go along with the environmental ideas of how to acquire calmness or maintain your peace of mind, something has got to be wrong with you. Now the second thing you're going to run into your selection and association with ideas, behavior patterns, starts to be very confusing. You don't know which is the right one and which is the wrong one. But what was accepted before is no longer seems to be accepted. And before you know it, you're swamped with all types of behavior patterns which to choose from. You'll be actually sitting at the cafeteria of behavioral ideas and don't know what to do. You'll get indigestion of the brain. Then you need mental physic, you know. That's a mental laxative to clear out the whole thing out of the consciousness. And again, you find that some days you'll meditate and you'll be going pretty well. You're like, nothing in this world can affect you. Boom. For a whole week, everything goes the other way. And for a whole month, it goes the other way. Or a whole year, it goes the other way. There's nothing seems to go. Like if you run into a stone wall. Then all of a sudden, you find that you're more confused than when you started out. You're grasping for every thread of information how to stay on an even keel in meditation. And then you start to wonder, why did I ever get into this thing? Why weren't I content to live in my little ignorance where it was blissful than to investigate into truth where it is so drastic and demanding? Just then, your higher intelligence comes to the rescue. As you say, in some writings, you will call it your guardian angel takes care now. Or the guru takes care. Or God takes care. Anyone you want to use. This is only the various cycles of natural resistance built into this mechanism in order to produce strength, in order to produce volition. As I said, first you'll get peace, you'll get a knowledge that of yourself, then there's a strength that comes. And finally, there's an extrasensory force that follows you. These are fires. They burn. At the same time, they can do something. They are power at the same time. And they say, when the soul has been burnt in the fires of wisdom and been bleached of all dross, it returns back to its pristine state. Ever knowing, ever doing, ever experiencing. But until that time, it's searching. It's trial and error. Now, don't think for one moment meditation is just horrible and drab. It's not. These are the many aspects of it. There are beautiful aspects in it too. There are aspects of beauty in it that will eventually, if we don't watch ourselves, we will develop into a big egotist. Because you think of something and it happens. And sooner or later your ego starts puffing up. You can do no wrong. But that's the worst time. He who knows is guilty first. And he is more gullible. Because he will use these forces of his consciousness unknowingly, uncontrolled, without any sense of direction, and hurt his own self with his own ego. But the divine intelligence is also great in itself that it stops it. You can only use up so much of this so-called force to develop this so-called inflated ego before the needle of bitter experience comes and punctures it, and you come tumbling back down in your feet. You start all over again, learning humility. That's why Jesus said to his mother, when she sensed it in him, they have no wine, she said. She sensed it in her son. And you can imagine in a nice Jewish family wedding, Abby, my boy, there is no more wine here. What you can do? And you can see him thinking, Mama, my time ain't come now. This is, could be the kind of expression, if one has ever lived among Jewish people and understand the humor that passes in their conversation. But she sensed it in her son. Now, if he was not aware of what this force could do, he would never remark, my time has not yet come. Because if he did it before his real time, it would be all ego. By not doing it before the divine time, which is conscious will or God's will in man, he was not liable for the repercussions of his thinking, which we call karma. Or the seeds you sow, you reap. There is no ego. You see, ego, an action performed from an egotistical attitude has certain repercussions. It's like a man writing on a piece of paper with a pen. Versus a man who would try to write on water. That is an egoless man. An egoless person, anything he does, there is no repercussion. In fact, the masters have always said, where there is no ego, under the worst conditions, where every man would fail, an egoless man would succeed. And that's what makes the difference. Because there is no motivation for personal gain. But meditation shows us this. Through the meditation, we are confronted with these things. We wouldn't find it in a book. We cannot find it in those scriptures. The scriptures are only references as to what we will experience from meditation. That's why meditation is such a difficult science to follow. Some of us give up. Others who continue you'll reach it. But I say this, don't give up. It's like two frogs at once fell into a bowl of cream. There was a large frog and a small frog. The large frog says, I'm not going to swim around here. I might try to get out of this thing. Might as well give up and die. Little frog says, no, as long as I am living, I'm breathing, I'm going to try. So he tried and tried and tried, and getting weaker and weaker. So with all his encouragement to the bigger frog, so the bigger frog joined and they tried, getting tired and tired. So the big frog says, I'm fed up. There is no hope. And he gave up and died. Little frog, who kept on breathing, said, well, as long as I'm breathing, I'm trying. So he kept on trying, and what happened? From moving around so long in that cream, the cream became hard like butter. He found himself sitting on a solid piece of substance, and he took a deep breath and jumped out of the boat. So it's exactly what would happen in meditation. You're going to find yourself sitting in a bowl of cream after a while when you start swimming around in it. You don't know where you're going. And if we give up, we're back just where we started. If we don't stop and we keep going, eventually we come out. This is one of the requirements for the strength of the soul. As I said, you will acquire a strength that you will never have before. You will not know the strength exists in you until you have passed through it. These are qualities that cannot be gained unless you experience them from within yourself. No one can give it to you, or you cannot read about it. And in a meditative class, you're forced to struggle with yourself. You're forced to study your mind, how it functions. Why does the mind move back and forth? Even if you close your eyes for a second, you want to think. It seems that you cannot stop thinking. And you ask yourself, why is it I cannot stop thinking just for one brief moment and give my brain a rest? So I'll force myself to sleep. But do we stop the brain thinking when we sound asleep? Ask yourself again, if I'm sound asleep, do I know if I'm a man or a woman? Right again, the brain is thinking. Do I really know if I'm a man or a woman when I'm sound asleep? And it will hang on your consciousness. Which is it? Who am I? What am I? What is this? Why do I keep thinking? Why can I not stop thinking? Now, the Zen masters have said, Zen begins when thinking stops. And we fondle and worry, what do they really mean? They try to meditate for hours trying to figure out, what does this man mean when he says, Zen begins when thinking stops. Zen is only a shortening of the word zenith. You reach the zenith of consciousness when your thinking stops. For the first time, you get an extrasensory awareness, an awareness that is devoid of thinking. Now, this is an entirely different experience altogether. That the moment it occurs, when that thinking stops, and there is no idea that you are familiar with via the five senses passing through the brain, at that very split second, the Japanese people or the Chinese people have all called it Satori, or the Orientals have called it realization, illumination. The Christian mystics have called it that. At that very instant, there is an extrasensory awareness. An awareness that stays with you if you are conscious of what you do. And if you are not, then it passes away. But it's never lost. You always seem to recollect in some form. You always seem to think back. I did have a strange experience. What is it? And then you start searching. And you start seeking the information for it. But the answer is in ourselves again. We have to go back in. And we will see a light. And the answer is in the light. The three colors of the light has the answer. There is the gold, and there is the blue. Now, the gold is the cosmic vibration on which the whole structure of creation exists. Or come into existence. Everything in this universe is a result of vibration. We cannot go outside of it. It's there. The Zen masters had this. If this is the sound of two hands clapping, what is the sound of one hand clapping? The same sound challenges the mind. And you start to ponder. But it's all vibration. Now, the masters have said, this is not where we stop, this is just where we begin to watch inside ourselves. Observation, I said meditation is observation and oneness of the noumena before. We are trying to observe first in order to become one. Now, in a few weeks from now, the Jewish people will be celebrating a particular day called Yom Kippur, or the Day of Atonement. Which actually is the Day of Atonement, but eventually became adulterated into a Day of Atonement. When the early mystics of the Hebrew faith practiced Atonement, and since they achieved the realization, the followers didn't achieve anything because the followers were not competent or did not evolve past it, so they then finding, like a dog in the manger, you know, can't eat the grass. So he says, no, it's not atonement. These masters weren't trying for atonement, they're trying for atonement. And end up having something to atone for. All the scriptures show, in all the writings of all the great sages, we are not atoning for anything. We are all striving to reach the atonement of God in ourselves. And by our own actions and thoughts, we modify what we have done. We alone can modify it. If you did something, we ourselves have the ability and the courage to make the modification. That's why Jesus could tell the man, your sins are forgiven you, and the people said he blasphemed. They did not comprehend the thing. We can modify what we have done by our power of thinking, concentration, and volition. No one has to do that for us. But we shirk this responsibility and we throw it off for somebody else. We pass the buck. This is a human principle too. This is part of our nature to do that. Because we find it was easier to do under certain environmental conditions at certain times. But then we sooner have to face it sometime or later. That we have to modify these things ourselves again. Until we make the jump, modify we cannot realize the atonement of our nature with God. Now the sages are trying to tell us that we must make the effort to realize our divine nature. They gave us basic techniques of how to do it. It has been called meditation, but the techniques are obvious to us all the time. When thine eyes are single, the body is full of light. How can you make your eyes single but to close them and watch inside? Now you have a car, it has two lights. Don't they not form into one single beam when it's focused out? The same principle of the optical nerve here. Doctors have proven now that the human brain has enough electrical power to light up a 25-watt bulb. Now, if the Master Jesus is talking of light, he's talking of the factual laws of nature. He's not talking of some imaginary thing. Now, there is a force, a divine power, existing right in here. that we have totally ignored, totally did not understand or comprehend. That's why he said the light shines in darkness and darkness comprehends it not. The five senses of the human brain cannot comprehend the intricacies of the extrasensory nature and its subtle electrical forces. It takes the extrasensory nature, the intuitive nature, to comprehend it. And it takes the actual inner experience of meditation to be exposed to it. Now those who have gone in and see this light and felt it can always vouch for three things. Any place, any time, they can vouch for peace, they can vouch for consciousness, they can vouch for strength. And peace means this whole body is shut down, as if it's a state of suspended animation. Consciousness, it knows. Your whole life history is open to the man who see it. There's nothing, that's why I say God is always watching you. You can't make a wrong move in front of this consciousness, because it's knowing, total knowing. And strength, that is, you can face your obligations or your responsibilities without shirking them or trying to hide in some retreat. The only retreat or any hermitage is this. The physical ones are only shortcuts to help us to realize this. They are not the real retreat. The real retreat is here yet. To understand this mechanism, to link this mechanism back to its source, the divinity itself. Now, meditation has another subtle function which is not obvious to people, except those who are highly sensitive and can observe what goes on in meditation. And that is a switching over of the inner currents from the negative portion of the human body, which is the emotional nature, to the positive portion of the human body, which is the devotional nature. Now, Jesus made one reference to that state, that condition, when he rebuked Peter. He said to Peter, "You have been with me so long in the regenerative life and knew me not." And many are stumped with that statement, not knowing what is involved in that statement. But Jesus was making reference to a very scientific principle within the principles of meditation and the process of meditation. You were with me in the regenerative life. He didn't say you were with me in the degenerate life or the generate life, but with the regenerate life. You were with me in the regenerate life and knew me not. Now, here is a human body talking to a human body. Is it that what is involved in the statement? No. The Master Jesus is fully aware of what is going on within his mechanism. Therefore, he is seeing within his own inner consciousness not only the golden light of pure vibration that is the cause of creation, he is seeing the pure Christ consciousness now, the intelligence present within that vibratory creation, from an independent source of the five senses, from an intuitive nature. He is fully aware of this function, and that this function regenerates all life. This function is responsible for life staying on the planet, or on all planets. It's responsible for bringing the dead back to life, because it's the intelligence within the life. It's the intelligence within the atomic structure. And this can only be perceived by an extrasensory nature. He's seeing this within himself, but Peter could not see this, because Peter was not that evolved. Peter was only a disciple and could not comprehend it. That's why when he asked Peter the question, "Who do men say that I am?" he was trying to find out if Peter had reached any realization within himself to comprehend what was going on. And Peter, Barry said, "Thou art Christ, Son of the living God." He said, "I didn't tell you that. My Father which is in heaven revealed it to you." In other words, you got a glimpse within yourself, Peter, of the extrasensory nature of your own self. And from that plateau of consciousness, you see the same thing I am seeing. You see the thing that I am identified with. And Peter still could not comprehend. That's why he made the remark. Peter was not able to have the transference from the energies from the emotional nature transferred to the energies of the devotional nature. This is something that goes on in meditation. That's why there is a link between a master and a disciple. We cannot meditate by ourselves and achieve real success. We all need help. That's why even when Master Jesus was on the earth, he had 12 disciples who he helped. And that's why there's a relationship between a master and a disciple. This goes on in an unbroken link all the time. Now he said, "He that doeth the will of the Father is my brother and my sister, and he that followeth in my word is my disciple." That is very specific. None of us can say we are doing the will of the Father. Otherwise we'd be doing identically the same thing as Jesus. And how many of us can say we are following in the word so we can be disciples? It's very difficult. Yet, to be a disciple, let's just take one of the requirements. Not all the requirements of his life. There are just two fundamental requirements. Love the Lord thy God with all your mind and heart, and neighbor as self. If we can't do that, so what? How are we going to start following being a disciple of such a master? You see the tremendous challenge that is being thrown upon an individual? The challenge is too much. Yet at the same time, within the challenge, there are the keys necessary to face the challenge and to cope with the challenge. The keys are, when thine eyes are single, the body is full of light. The light shines in the darkness, where is it going to shine? Inside this cranium of ours, this skull box. And the darkness comprehends it not. The darkness is only your five senses, because it's limited to the wall. It cannot see beyond the wall. So how can it comprehend outside of the wall? Until you have an extrasensory nature, or an extrasensory experience, which transcends it, and some people call it clairvoyant. Clairvoyant is to see clearly. Until you have this extrasensory experience of this divine quality in yourself, and I don't mean what passes for ESP in the on that level, I'm talking of something entirely different, all removed from that. Until this nature of yours is perceiving the creative principle, then we can comprehend what the Master Jesus is talking of. When we meditate, there are three colors. There's a goal color, and the goal is the Holy Spirit or holy vibration. St. Paul experienced it when he was struck blind, totally blind, to teach him humility, that another physical human being had to restore his sight by touching him on the eyes. And remember, Paul was a Jewish man by birth of Roman citizenry. He's born under Roman government that to occupy the country of his native land. And he pursued his own countrymen who were calling themselves Christians. They were all Jewish people. Now he pursued them and he turned them in for money until he was struck down blind to be taught humility, to go to one of them to be touched on the eyes, to be healed, to regain his sight. We're talking of something here that is involving difference. And he saw this light, and out of this light he heard a voice. Now where does this voice come from? The Master said it comes from the blue, the color that we see inside. There's an opalescent blue light in there. And all the Masters, and I don't say mediums or entities that people go to mediums and try to hear something about a past life or future life. The Masters, the real saints of God, the real realized people of God, they communicate with us from that realm. That is the intuitive realm, that is the Christ realm. It's blue. In that realm, and Master Jesus knew it thoroughly, and Master Yogananda, when he was in the body, used to teach people how to see Jesus. Not an imaginary Jesus, because he gave the technique, and now he said, when you meditate, look inside here until you see the blue light. And don't stop until you see Jesus. Now, if he says, if you see Jesus, don't stop, lest you think it's an imagination, until Jesus materializes himself in front of you. He says, and don't stop meditating until Jesus speaks to you. And he says, don't stop meditating until Jesus will eat a piece of bread that you have taken and hand him to eat, and have evidence that that bread would not rot 10, 15 days after. Then you know you had an experience with the real Jesus of the scriptures, not an imaginary experience of some dreamed up thing or the fact that he didn't exist. And this was a master who lived in this century, passed away in 1952. And these were his explicit instructions to all his disciples, that the masters are not fakes. They do exist and they are not dead. And the approach to them is via meditation. It's a genuine science. No. But they say to us, the road is not easy, but it has its compensations. Do not look for the miracles, because what would benefit you to gain the whole world and lose your soul? That's one way of putting it. But first, concentrate on attaining the inner peace, attaining the consciousness, attaining the inner strength, and the fourth will be added to you. That's why he says, seek ye first the kingdom of God which is within you, and all these things will be added. This added is a real truth. If you set out seeking extrasensory perception, developing one, two, three different parts of it, sooner or later they will fade away, pass away from you. But if you concentrate on acquiring the inner peace, the inner consciousness, and the inner strength, these forces flow by divine grace. This is an unusual principle. Why? It's to separate the psychics from the saints. The psychics will always be around us, but the saints are very few, because their road is so hard, to not to be trapped by the ego, to exhibit the psychic power, to exhibit the spiritual forces. It's easy to know that we have this thing and we want to do it. We want to help. You have a loved one who is dying and you want to help them. And you may be in the possession of the force. And you say, is it wrong that I should not? You go through all type of mental turmoil to do these things. Yet the divine law is still there that tells us we can't interfere with that person's spiritual principle. We can send them thoughts and love and hope that the divine will flow through. That's why in time certain people Jesus never healed them. He said, with these people I can do nothing. And some he healed. But he didn't come primarily to heal. If that was his mission, then that would be the mission of all the spiritual masters. The mission of all the masters is to make us understand the principle of life. I have come that you may have life more abundantly, that you may understand how life functions within you as God more abundantly, not in the sense of material objects, in the sense that consciousness can focus it. That's why he said, no man taketh my life from me. I lay it down, I can pick it up back. I have this consciousness. I know from what I speak of that this conscious life can go down in a physical frame and walk away and come back. Some people call it astral projection, but it's more than that. Because how would he raise up Lazarus from the dead? There are other principles involved. There are principles of love that are highly involved in it that we don't know about. See, love, above all things, was his first commandment. And above all things was his last commandment. He says, love one another. Because within the secret of love, all the things that are added come flowing quicker. But once the concept of love is dried up in us, we struggle to find these things. It don't work. That's why he made a great issue of love. And all the masters who teach truth will tell you that love can move it. Love can do it. Love is devotion. And that's why it's different. To those who meditate and they say, I don't get results, Dano. How can you say I'm getting results and I don't see results? I'm getting more turmoil. And I say, you are getting results. It's the turmoil that represents results. The more turmoil you get is the more results you're getting, because you're getting the strength that I'm looking for. It's coming out of you. The ability to fight back your emotional nature. The stronger you get above your emotional nature, the greater your devotion will become. The greater the realization will become. But without it, you have nothing. If a car don't have certain traction or resistance to move against, it's going. That's like a chicken in a shell. If you try to tear off the shell before the chick to help the chicken will die. Let that chicken fight its way out. Sometimes you see it fighting and you so much compassion, feeling for that chicken. Why does he have to struggle so much? But he's gaining strength. How is he going to gain strength? Where is he going to get if you only spoon feed him or lead him by the hand all the time? Meditation, that's why it's individualistic. It is something that demands the strength to come out of us. It is something, it's a process that brings out the strength in us. It's the process that brings out the peace that is latent in us. It's a process that opens up a consciousness that is dormant in us, in order that we can become a channel for the forces that hold us together. It's a big difference when we start meditating to understand what we are doing. Meditation is not involved in healing, neither is it involved in trying to perform miracles. Neither is it involved in trying to make us holier than thou or better than the other individual. It's not. It's totally involved with a face-to-face reality with yourself and God. And the emphasis being on your self-effort. Now, when Jesus spoke, he spoke in a dualistic language. Very psychological, very spiritual, very literal at the same time. You see me, you see the Father. And this is a very psychological statement and a very spiritual statement. And a very literal statement. God is a manifested form, body, matter. Come, let us make man in our own image and likeness. Man is the organized mechanism or thinking mechanism, male and female. Image is the electronic principle. Likeness is the total awareness, the conscious life in it. And if you see it, you got to see the realized consciousness, which is God. But you're not seeing a body. You're not seeing an image. As to say, my hand is God. You're seeing the forces of nature or the divine principles congealed as a result of these laws. Until, as a scientist, we start breaking it down and we start to see the complex mathematical intricacies involved in putting it together. Then we realize we haven't yet tapped this divinity, because we couldn't even make a fingernail, let alone try to put it together. We're tapping certain of its functions. So when he said, you see me, you see the Father, it's psychological in one way, it's literal in one way, but spiritual in another way. Because this was the whole creative principle, that we face the life within us and experience this from an extrasensory nature. That we do see this force for the first time, responsible for us. The only way to describe that, until you can see the white light inside your head, and it looks like a dove, that's why he said a dove descended on his shoulder. It's like a five-pointed star upside down, always beaming on you, like a spotlight. You can't, there's no way you can turn, it's always there. You can open your eyes and you'll see it all the time. You can't shut your eyes, there's no place you can go to hide from it. You're always looking at you. In other words, God, you're always in front of the consciousness of God. There's no way you can hide from God. In other words, there is nowhere you can hide from your inner self once it's open to you. That is why masters have always said, when the student is ready, they'll come. That means when we are ready to live a life of self-observation, a meditative life, they will intercede and take us in hand. Not until we are ready for that. They don't take a hand. They allow us our own free will to burn up ourselves through our own ego, through our own emotional nature. But when we've reached what they call the point where we want to change, we want to reevaluate ourselves and really set our consciousness on realization of ourselves, then they will intercede. Then they say you're ready. Now, you can't find them, they'll find you. This is a peculiar part of the truth. None of the disciples found Jesus. Jesus found them. If you read back in your scriptures, did they find Jesus? Did they go out and look for him? He came and found them. He called them to him. This is one of the laws of it. A disciple is not seeking his master. A master is picking up his disciples, those who are ready in consciousness. He's drawing them to him. Now, when you are ready, you are drawn regardless. And you don't have to hear this conversation. The moment you close your eyes to meditate, you will feel it, the pull from inside, that you know you're ready to go inside. My conversation will just flitter away to your ears. The moment you shut your eyes, from now on inside, you're going. The inner consciousness, the God within you, the real master, is pulling you in now. He is taking you out of this sensory realm. He is lifting you up. That's why you say the guru means he who lifts up. Not the literal man. Literal men don't lift up. It is the consciousness that lifts us up from within ourselves. But we have the respect and we have the obligation and the example of what soul is in a literal man. Unless we had one to inspire us, we wouldn't know. We would have no way to evaluate ourselves. So we are given meditation as a way, as a process, to make this evaluation, to make this self-discovery. To sum it up, we have to do it ourselves. And don't worry about reaching the end of realization. Realization is a moment-to-moment experience. Most people have already pictured in their mind that realization is some way out in the limb, you know. It's not. If you get into the French word réaliser, that is to make concrete. And to make concrete is to experience. It's a moment-to-moment experience from within yourself. So once you begin to look inside, there's the golden light, there's the blue, and there's the white. The white light is pure consciousness. But I said before, the whole thing is sung also. There are some songs that you will hear from the audible life stream flowing in you. In the book of Revelation, and it's well named too, Revelation. That means it was revealed from within to the man who wrote the book. No one gave it to him, no physical person gave it to him. He had to meditate, and he did not get it in his early part of his life, he got it in the latter part of his life, when he was in exile and in prison. The author of the book of Revelation is called John, and he died on an island called Patmos, and it was in the prison. He had the revelation of the electronic structure of his mechanism. From the meditation, he saw now the electrical anatomy of his mechanism. For the first time, he saw it. And in that electrical anatomy, he saw and wrote in the language he thought best he could have written. and describe it. You said around the throne of God there were 7 golden candlesticks with 7 angels. This was the only way he could have described it, because he lived in an agricultural society at the time. A throne would be a seat. Candlestick would represent light. An angel would represent an intelligence. In modern terminology, to the realized man, at the center of pure consciousness, there are 7 vortices of energy revolving in the electronic anatomy of the human body. And within these vortices, there are 7 levels of awareness, representing your 7 angels. Now, when you look inside, as I said, this is revealed, and you look inside from long practice of meditation, you begin not only to see, but you hear. That's why in the scriptures you will often read where the prophets said, lo, they turned to the east, and they heard the voice of God like many waters, and like the sound of the trumpet blowing. People thought you were looking at geographical east, and there was some guy behind him with a long thing blowing, you know, standing by the riverside. It didn't mean that. This is east in man, this is west in man, this is north in man, and this is south in man. He's a miniature universe already. Trumpet blowing is one of the centers, one of these vortices giving off a particular sound. And that particular intelligence with that sound has a certain extrasensory power of its own, which they call the psychic force or psychic power, that reaches out and affects matter. Or we can say he acquired some force from God that he can control his environment. He heard this within himself and therefore acquired it. This is an acquired knowledge now by revelation.
And like
God, the sole reality that we are. The first phase of this whole process is towards observation, because we would not know what to do when we became one if we did not observe. We are creatures who must rationalize. We don't know why we have to rationalize. You ask yourself why you have to rationalize things, but you do it. It's some form of self-satisfaction for your ego that you want to do it, but you do it nevertheless. So the Creator has made it possible for you to rationalize as much through observation. Even in the extrasensory part of your makeup, He has made this rationalization possible. Remarkable man, huh? Marvelous concept, and yet, as you say, as a principle of truth. Until you have totally saturated with observation of your inner nature, of your whole being, none of us will accept the oneness of His divinity. It's very hard for any man to want to accept the oneness of His divinity. Yet, when you do accept the oneness of your divinity, this is an odd thing, because even Jesus had to accept it, and all great masters do accept it eventually. I and my Father are one. But they are not talking it from lip service now. I and my Father are one is definitely a realization that comes now from a transformation of the emotional nature to a devotional nature. It's a change in that person. Sometimes you see it among Catholic mystics or Christian saints, where there's a sudden transformation from one phase of life to, and they never seem to go back. As if some people who can stop smoking and drinking like that. Others may take time. Some people who stop instantly may fall back. It has happened. And so it has happened too with those who had a certain change of consciousness. There are cases where that had happened. It's a big difference when we understand what is going on, that an inner change can come in a dramatic way, or it can come in a gradual way. One last aspect of meditation, and you can ask questions, because I hope I'm not keeping you folks bored with my words. The final aspect of meditation is called moksha, or liberation. Freed while living. It's easy to be freed when you're dead. There's nothing to be worrying about. There's no more responsibility in a physical sense to be involved with. But then you're freed into eternity, in which the greater involvement and the greater responsibility becomes. But you don't know what that responsibility is and what that involvement is. This is something we can only assume from our five senses as we look out through the sky. We can't see it by an extrasensory nature, what is occurring in its electrical principles, let alone it's in its ideational principle. We don't know. But to be freed while living in a mechanism gives us a possibility of what the responsibility and the involvement can be when we do decide to shed the frame. That's why they say, the question has always come up, why do masters die? If they are masters of life and death, why do they have to die? This you can see is a